And now the game where we get to bring on people who are experts in one area of inquiry and ask them about something else entirely. The inauguration of a president isn't just about politics, it's about parties. Who wore what to where? And who better to comment on that than Cindy Levy, the editor-in-chief of Glamour magazine. Cindy, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thank you.
Great to have you.
Happy to be here. I'm a fan.
So, enough politics, let's talk fashion. Were you down at the inauguration?
I was there.
Were you at any of the balls?
I went back to New York before the balls, but I was there the day of the swearing-in and for a couple of the events before that.
Well, who cares about all that? Let's talk about, I started off the show today making a little crack about Michelle Obama's ball gown. What is the consensus in the glitterati community about
I would say the consensus is thumbs up, but not without reservation.
I mean,
personally, I thought it was a home run. You know, I just thought it was a beautiful dress. I thought she looked great. I loved the fact that she went with a designer who's 26 years old and has had his company for all of about 2 years. I mean, I thought that was a very Obama thing to do, if that makes sense. You know, she was not going with one of the big gun established names in the fashion industry, and I thought that was terrific. You know, there was a little bit of chatter, if you look deep into the blogs, about did it look too bridal? Was it too much like a prom dress?
But were those clumps of Kleenex up and down the
apparently it was beading.
Yes,
that's the word on the street.
Wow. And you didn't think that she was shown up a little by Jill Biden, who looked pretty good, I have to say.
Well, Jill Biden looked great. Actually, Jill Biden was a ringer for Miley Cyrus. They were near identical dresses. If you look at what Miley Cyrus wore to the ball she went to and what Jill Biden
Miley's
wore.
The younger one.
Yeah. That's how you can tell them apart.
Yeah, you can tell them apart. One. Now, there are also some people who said that our new president made a faux pas because he wore a white tie with a tuxedo jacket.
Well, I thought that was actually a good step because she was wearing a white dress and he was matching the wife, which I generally think is a good rule for men to follow. You don't want to clash with the wife.
So basically you're telling me you're in the tank here, is what you're saying.
I am totally in the tank.
Yeah. Totally in the tank.
She drank the Kool-Aid.
All right.
But
doesn't your magazine specialize, in fact, in sometimes printing like fashion or makeup errors with the bars across the eyes of the perpetrator?
Yeah, the do's and don'ts page.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what we're famous for.
Right. And so you didn't see anything in all the various...
Well, you know, I was not a huge fan of the ensemble that she wore the next day to go to a prayer breakfast, but I kind of have a problem criticizing somebody for what they're wearing to a prayer breakfast.
It yes.
Just seems wrong.
Really?
You don't want to go naked.
That's true.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, how about Aretha Franklin's hat?
It was not a diminutive hat.
Right.
I will give you that.
How about Antonin Scalia's Italianate yarmulke?
You know, that's our next cover. I can't really comment.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
I don't want to give it away.
Don't airbrush him, though. Just let him be. Let him be. There was some odd headwear out there, I have to say.
Yeah, there were a lot of hats that day, but it was very, very cold. I mean, I actually couldn't believe that the president himself, that President Obama, was not wearing an overcoat. It was frigid out there.
Wow, because he is heated by the furnace of righteousness.
That's well, he is apparently supernatural, yes.
Well, talk to us about Glamour magazine. I am not a regular reader of fashion and style magazine, so tell me how Glamour...
And if you could see him...
You know, you'd understand.
We do intend to change that, Peter.
I know. You can fix me, but tell me how Glamour stands out from, like, Cosmo and Elle and the other competitors in the field.
Well, in our approach to fashion, our job, as we see it, is to be friendly to the reader. You know, we don't consider ourselves the sort of mean, finger-wagging fashion authorities who will make you feel that you are not rich enough or thin enough to wear this stuff. We try to be approachable and relatable, and, you know, we show our share of crazy designer concoctions, but we're always trying to pair it with something that an average woman might actually have in her closet.
But do you show them being worn by fat, homely people like us?
Not having seen you, I can't actually speak to that. but, you know, we do. I mean, in all seriousness, I do think that most models tend to be, a bit too much on the thin side, a bit too much on the sullen side. And so, yeah, we try to feature models who don't actually look like they're angry at you. That's
how dare you look at me with those eyes.
Okay,
I have a question for you. I notice in your magazine you often tell the readers what the new trend is. You know, like, oh, the new trend in makeup is this, or the new trend in clothing is that. Where do you get that? I mean, do you guys ever just make that up?
Every month, Peter. Come on.
Have you ever been tempted to, like, totally punk your readers? Like, ladies and gentlemen, propeller beanies are the new black. Just to see how many gullible women you can get to wear propeller beanies?
Well, you know, yes, I've been tempted, but I have resisted the temptation.
Really?
You know, it's funny because I was just looking. We're having a big anniversary issue. Our 70th anniversary is in April, and so I've been looking back at a lot of past glamours. And it is humbling to see how many of the things the magazine deemed to be glamour don'ts over the years have actually turned out to be completely acceptable. I mean, we wrote an entire article in, I think, 1963 about how miniskirts were, you know, the worst thing to happen to womankind since God knows what. And you know, obviously, we were not correct on that one.
What were you in favor of? Burkas? I mean, what?
Maxis, I suppose. I'm not even sure what they are.
Bustles? You wanted to bring back the bustle in 1965.
I'm embarrassed to say we did.
Your latest issue is the guy issue. Mm-hmm. And you actually have these... You have something that I see more often in Cosmo. I'm a regular Cosmo reader.
And
the article is like, you know, I forget what it's like, 15 things that a man really wants in bed. And I'm like, come on. I worked on this all day. I came up with two. And the second is to have a sandwich after. So...
That does leave us 13.
I know.
Widescreen TV, ESPN.
Two more.
Who are you trying to kid here, honestly?
Maybe it's up to glamour to expose you to the other 289 things you actually want.
I want to ask you a little bit about yourself, because all I know about editors of fashion magazines is what I see in The Devil Wears Prada. Are you, in fact, a crazed, power-mad harridan?
No. I mean, I aspire to diva-dom, but I'm not a very good diva.
Really?
No. I mean, I once joked to my assistant that if she ever wrote a book about me, it was going to be called The Devil Wears Whatever's Clean. I mean, I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, and, I'm just like any other working mom. I always feel like I'm running around like a chicken without its head.
Have you ever been tempted? Because, I mean, you know, you can. Everybody would be like, oh, that's okay. She's just being a diva. She's the editor of a fashion magazine. You have carte blanche to behave abominably.
You're right, and I'm going to start tomorrow.
There you go.
Thank you for the inspiration.
You can. Well, Cindy Levy, we are so pleased to have you with us. Now, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Welcome to the Octagon!
Wow, Carl.
All right. You asked in the latest issue of Glamour what men really like. Well, let me tell you what we like. We like mixed martial arts. The ultimate fighting championship. Two men armed with nothing but boxer shorts and gloves and their own repressed homoeroticism. We're going to ask you three questions about the sport taken from the new book Blood in the Cage by L. John Wertheim of Sports Illustrated. Answer two questions, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, laying a smackdown on their home answering machine.
Okay.
So, Carl, who is Glamour editor Cindy Levy playing for?
Cindy is playing for Robert Lockman of Shreveport, Louisiana.
All right, first question. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
In the early days of its existence, the Ultimate Fighting Championship had some problems, including which of these? A, because of legal restrictions, matches had to be advertised as fashion shows demonstrating new athletic equipment, which brought in the wrong kind of crowd. B, it had no weight classes, leading in one instance to a 200-pound karate student facing down a 600-pound sumo wrestler from New Jersey. Or C, the rules were so lax that somebody started hitting an opponent with a hidden wrench, yelling, "It's allowed! It's allowed!"
Well, let's see. I'm going to eliminate the fashion show choice because I think that seems too far-fetched. So then it was B, the weight classes.
Yes, no weight classes.
Or C, or hitting with
somebody,
the wrench.
Yes.
Which I would think would be...
Allowed.
Allowed, right? Why is that a problem? Yeah. I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, the no weight class. You're right. There were just three rules. There was no weight class. There was no time limit. By the way, the karate guy kicked the sumo guy's butt. Right. No, the sport has come a long way. since that first match. In fact, during that first match in 1993, on that card, competitor Gerard Gourdeau won his fight despite what significant handicap? Was it A, police, seeing the fight on TV, rushed to the auditorium to arrest the fighters on charges of assault while it was still going on? B, he won his fight despite having some of his opponent's teeth lodged in his foot?
Oh.
Or C, he was high on LSD, which he maintained, quote, made the whole fighting thing a lot more peaceful.
Oh, my gosh. I guess I'm going to go with the foot, just
you're
because
go with
it's
the foot.
So colorful. I want to believe it's true.
It is true, Cindy. It is. He was fighting sumo wrestler Tilia Tulia, a 400-pound sumo wrestler. There were a lot of those. Gourdeau delivered a vicious kick to his face, and his foot came back with a little souvenir. All right. Last question. Even now, as the UFC has gone mainstream, odd things still happen, such as in a match in 2007 between Luke Cummo and Josh Haynes, at which what happened? A, after getting hit really hard, Haynes rebounded off the floor with a swift attack and threw to the ground the referee. B, after a hard blow, Cummo began trying to climb out of the ring and ended getting his shorts caught in the fencing and just hanging there. Or C, unable to escape from a headlock, Cummo began tickling Haynes, and it worked.
Well, I want to believe it's the tickling, but I think it's the ref.
Again, you're right. Ooh. Terrifying. Ooh. Right. Ooh. Did you know anything about the UFC? You ever seen a mixed martial arts?
No, I have to admit, I've never even heard of it.
Really? It's great.
That
it's
terrible?
Very. I don't think you'd like it. Getting around to
it's not uplifting.
So what happened was Haynes was knocked to the ground. He had a blow to the head, and he got up. He's like, I got to get back. And he tackled his opponent and brought him to the ground. A beautiful takedown, as they say in the sport. But it was the referee who said to him, "I think this is over now." So, Carl, how did Cindy do on our quiz?
Well, Cindy, you aced it. 3 correct answers, so you win for Robert Lachman.
Yay, Robert!
Well done. Well done. Cindy Levy is the editor of Glamour Magazine and the woman's lifestyle contributor for the Today Show. Cindy Levy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.